You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for the Sacramento Kings offseason coverages. We're counting down the days to the start of the 2018-2019 NBA season. My name is Matt George. Hello and welcome. I have the privilege of being your host here on Locked On Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm from Sports 1140 KHDK. That is the flagship radio station of your Sacramento Kings. I work there as a radio host and a multimedia journalist. If you haven't heard yesterday's podcast, part one of my conversation with Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report, I need you to pause this podcast right now. Go back, listen to that one all the way through, because today is part two of our conversation. Again, Grant Hughes, a national columnist for Bleacher Report. He spent an hour with me on Monday night talking about everything that had to do with the Sacramento Kings and the NBA, their direction, where they're going, and also he shared his opinions on how the national media approaches and covers teams like the Sacramento Kings. It's all great stuff. Part one was yesterday. I'm playing part two for you today. So again, if you haven't heard it, you need the context from part one. Go back and listen to that before listening to this one here today. Grant is such an amazing guy, and I'm so thankful for him to take the time to spend on this podcast. I've gotten great feedback from so many people already from yesterday's podcast, what they liked and didn't like about what Grant had to say and what they liked and didn't like about what I had to say. It's all fair game. You can send it to me, tweet it to me at MattGeorgeKHDK. You can also tweet it to Grant, and I encourage you to do so because he's more than willing to listen to feedback and to get into conversations with you at @GT_Hughes. Again, Bleacher Report, one of the best NBA writers you can find on Bleacher Report. Grant Hughes, kind enough to join us. So before I get to part two, do me a quick favor as well. If you have the time, go to iTunes or to Stitcher, depending upon which one of the two that you mainly use to listen to, and leave a quick review for the podcast. It helps us out a whole heck of a lot. You can leave a blurb about what you like or don't like, or you can just leave a 5-star or add a 5-star review, 4, 3, 2, doesn't matter. Send anything that you want to see improved on the podcast, anything you like or don't like about really anything is fair game. Me or the formatting, the commercials, all of that, we listen to it and we use it to improve this podcast every single day. Enough blabbing, enough of me going all over the place. Here is part two of my interview with Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report following this quick ad. I want to get back to this article. I appreciate you going down that rabbit trail with me when it comes to this organization. All the issues, so complex. There's so many branches hanging off of this big tree that is the Kings front office and their decision-making. But back to Luka Doncic really quick. Vlade has a reputation, at least in Europe and among European basketball, as someone that's very deeply ingrained with his scouting network, with his connections that he has. Multiple reports saying that Vlade has been keeping his eyes and watching Luka play for a number of years. The picture surfaced of him and owner Vivek Ranadive having dinner with Luka. We know members of the Kings front office went and watched him multiple times last season, and Vlade and the ownership went over there multiple times over the summer before ultimately deciding to go with Marvin Bagley. So someone who has the reputation that Vlade has in terms of European scouting and someone who clearly did his homework and spent time watching Luka and ultimately deciding not to pick him, does that raise any red flags for you as a pro Luka guy of maybe they saw something in Luka or don't think his game will translate to the NBA quite as well as so many others do?
Well, I mean, if you're asking me, do I know more about basketball in general or European basketball in particular than Vlade, the answer has to be no. I think, you know, with something like this, all I can do is look at the options available from obviously a significant remove. I'm not there talking to the prospects. I'm not with Vlade, you know, checking out the EuroLeague stuff, or I'm not in Slovenia, that kind of thing. To me, it is interesting. And frankly, I'm surprised. I think when I first found out the Kings had the second pick, I thought, oh, Doncic for sure, because of some of the reasons you said. Yeah. Because, you know, okay, Vlade must know this guy or know him better than almost every other executive in the league. This is done. So it is a little surprising. I don't know what to make of it, but I think your theory is sound. They must have just decided that this just isn't the guy. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe we'll never know. Maybe it'll turn out that he was the guy. But it is a little strange that you know, what seemed like a foregone conclusion just didn't come to pass.
Going back to Vlade making comments and sometimes putting his foot in his mouth, would you rather of him come out and said that he just wasn't that guy? Or are you okay with him deciding to go the other route, saying they preferred Marvin Bagley because not wanting to take the ball out of De'Aaron Fox's hands and yada, yada, yada?
I mean, something in between. I don't think you ever, it's a bad look to come out and say, we didn't like this guy. It almost never happens. I think I would have been, I don't want to say satisfied, but it would have been acceptable, I guess, to me if Vlade and the Canes had come out and said, look, Bagley's our guy. He's been our guy all along. You know, that's what every team does, right? They say, you know, whoever they picked in the top five, they say, well, we have this guy number one on our board. And you don't need to get into why. Because, you know, look, every rookie is still kind of a ball of clay at this point. You don't need to talk about fit. You don't need to talk about the other stuff. Just say, this is our guy. We love him. We can't wait to see what he develops into. We're really excited. That's all you need to do. That's all most teams do. I would have been fine with that.
And didn't he do that to some extent, though, Grant, with the young super team comment? I defended him a lot off of those comments because he kind of said it tongue-in-cheek. If you're just listening to the audio of it, which is what my first impression was, having been on the radio at the time that he did that press conference, I heard that and I thought, oh, Vlade, what in the world are you doing? But then you actually watch the video and you see him kind of smiling, chuckling, and showing an excitement level of this young core that he has built and put together and that he believes in. So ultimately, that to me is him showing respect and support for what he's building and showing excitement in that. I didn't take anything wrong away from that. What was your impression of that young super team comment?
I mean, I don't think you could, it would be difficult for me to take that, you know, any way other than tongue in cheek, just because the super team thing gets thrown around all the time. Now, I didn't have a problem with it. I think anyone that really did have a problem with it, like you said, maybe just read it and didn't see it in context or see sort of the way that he was phrasing it. And it's, you know what? I think a lot of times, like, it takes just supreme overconfidence for great players to be great. It's just a common trait among the best players. They believe they're the best, even if, you know, LeBron James is the guy guarding them. They still think they're the best. I think executives probably need that, too. You need to believe and be excited and have faith in what you're doing. Otherwise, it's hard to be successful. So yeah, that was fine to me.
I've asked this question to a lot of analysts here on the podcast and gotten a lot of different and great answers. So I'm curious about your opinion on it. The Kings could have taken Luka at 2, ultimately don't go with Marvin Bagley. And then the Atlanta Hawks do take Luka Doncic, but trade him away to Dallas for basically a straight up. They did get a 2019 or first round pick out of it, but if I remember correctly, it's pretty heavily protected and ultimately get Trae Young. So basically as close as you can get to a straight up rookie for rookie 3-5 swap. Looking back, if Luka turns into the guy that we all expect him to be and this star out of Europe, who regrets it more? The Kings for not taking the clear-cut number 2 and going with Bagley, or the Atlanta Hawks for having him and then trading him away?
Man, that's tough. It's like, would you rather have had the ability to take whoever you wanted or actually gotten the guy and let him go? It's hard to say. I think probably the Hawks would be most regretful, but I'm not really sure how to measure it. I think, like I said, I would have loved to have seen the Kings kind of play coy a little bit and telegraph that maybe they were going to take Doncic and just kind of see what kind of offers might have been there. Because unless you're really sure, and they seem really sure Bagley's their guy, I think it makes sense to take, you know, a spot or two drop and get another first rounder, especially, and we haven't talked about this yet, the Kings don't have their first rounder in 2019. Mm-hmm. So if you could have added another first, that's huge. I'm ducking your question because I'm not sure how to gauge who would be more regretful if Doncic really pops, but I feel like it was a missed opportunity for the Kings and potentially a blunder by the Hawks too.
A lot of it depends on how Trae Young turns out in Atlanta and ultimately how Marvin Bagley turns out. So it's a tough question, but I'm always curious to get someone's initial reaction to that because some will drastically go, oh, it's got to be the Hawks, or some will drastically go, it's got to be the Kings. It makes so much sense. So it's a fun little thing to float out there. I want to move on, though, to the remainder of this offseason and what took place after the draft, which was the ever-important and fun free agency period, one of my favorite times of the year. And the Kings entered free agency period with what you said in one of your articles. I'm trying to find it off the top of my head. I believe it was the, let's see here. I want to get the right title. Aha, NBA teams blowing it in free agency. And you put three teams together in one big category at the end. The Kings were amidst those three teams because they were three teams that considered to have the advantage of a lot of money on their side in a market that was relatively weak with so many teams still recovering from the TV money that they just threw away to all those bad contracts. Next summer is expected to be a better free agency market in terms of players available, but also more teams are going to be involved. So you could say, I suppose, that the Kings had a distinct advantage over so many teams and didn't get the job done. What have you liked and not liked that Sacramento Kings have done during this this offseason period and free agency period?
I mean, the main likes, I think Bielitsa was not used to his full potential in Minnesota. I like him as a player a lot. He's actually a guy, I think he's probably going to have to play small forward, but he's better at the four. He can really put the ball on the floor. He can move the ball. He can pass. He's a good shooter. He's a suspect defender, but he competes. I thought getting him, especially after he was basically out of the league, he was going to go play in Europe. I mean, and it's a reasonable contract. I think the third year is non-guaranteed. I like that. Yogi Ferrell's fine. I think he's probably better than Frank Mason. I think he'll at least push Mason to third or maybe, really force Mason to pick it up to keep his backup job. Those are fine signings to me. The Zach LaVine offer sheet was just, I was just stunned, and I thought it was just awful and that the Kings really dodged a bullet when the Bulls matched. But those are the two kind of poles, I guess, of the offseason for me. Free agency wise, the on the margin signings were fine, and potentially better than that. And the LaVine offer sheet to me was just crazy. I just couldn't wrap my head around that one.
So the clear cut hole for the Kings is still at the small forward, the three spot. And in reality, there weren't too many sexy names available at that three spot other than LeBron James, who, surprise, surprise, despite Sacramento's billboards, never really considered the Kings. Man, I didn't see that one coming. You mentioned the Zach LaVine money out there. I wasn't super low on the idea of LaVine here. I thought he could definitely help this team offensively, although it was nothing that I thought blows anything out of the water, nothing that would make the Kings immediately better. I'm with you. It was more of a head-scratcher move than anything else. Ultimately, the Bulls match, and we'll figure out if that was a bullet dodge or not. It certainly seems like it in the short term. But when the Kings do throw money out there at a Zach LaVine, and also threw money allegedly at Mario Hezonja, who took a smaller deal to go and play in New York along with Kristaps Porzingis. I'm curious, how much can we hold that against the Kings? Because they did make an effort to throw money at guys that they thought would make sense and could fit. Ultimately, all of those fall through. So is it really a case of the Kings twiddling their thumbs and they sat here and they waited too long and were too late? Or was the market really against them at the small forward spot to begin with?
Well, I don't know. It's certainly small forward is a position where every team is trying to land that 3-and-D guy if they can't get a superstar. That's just that's really priority one for just about every team in the league. I guess I wouldn't say, here's my criticism of how the Kings have managed this summer's cap space and really last year's too. There are deals out there. If you're willing to take on bad money for a year or even two, you can really get a good asset if you take on 2 years of money. And get a draft pick attached. Damari Carroll to the Nets 2 years ago, the Nuggets just dumped three different guys with assets attached. Wilson Chandler, Kenneth Faried, Darrell Arthur, all those guys could have been had and fit into the Kings cap space without giving anything up. And then you get a first round pick and a bunch of seconds. And again, I think, bolstering your cupboard, I guess, of draft assets for the Kings is really important still, because I don't think they have that franchise cornerstone, that superstar on this roster, and you need a bunch of cracks at draft picks to get that guy. So that's my main criticism. I don't know if it's about timing or the lack of small forwards or whatever, but to me, the best use of their cap space in the last 2 years would have been taking on, crummy contracts, just kind of eating that money for a year and going into the draft with more swings at a superstar. Other teams do it. It's a common practice if you've got cap space and you're not a playoff team. And it's a little frustrating to me that the Kings haven't gone that route.
Ultimately, we don't know what the Kings have tried or tried not to do. We they could have been involved in the Denver Nuggets conversation or in any of these other, who knows, they could be involved with Memphis of trying to take on Chandler Parsons for a haul. And so I'm not going to hold that against you or anybody who brings that up, because quite frankly, we don't know. In reality, we shouldn't know. I think it's a plus for this Kings organization that a lot of times so many people don't know what the Kings are doing, which is a big improvement from the leaky dam that was this organization when Vlade first took over and when Pete D'Alessandro was in charge. I remember that Nuggets dump specifically because so many Kings fans had a negative reaction to it of why weren't the Kings that team to get that pick. But ultimately, it was a very late round 2019 first rounder that was protected. And then you would have gotten two more big men in return. One you would have probably waived and the other one you would have paid in Kenneth Faried. But you already have so many bigs on this roster. Did that really make sense? I'm still not seeing, Grant, and I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people, I'm still not seeing a salary dump move that suggests that the King, it's worth taking on that money for the Kings. Is it really as simple as any 2019 first round pick would have been worth taking on that kind of money?
Yeah, I mean, I think the going rate has definitely gone up to get those picks. It used to be, you know, if you do a study on it, it'd be about $15 million. If you took on $15 million for a year, you could get a first out of it with, you know, whatever protections or whatever. You know, the Damari Carroll trade really is a good example. And you know, the Nets ended up getting what was a very late pick because Toronto was so good last year. But to me, there aren't a lot of those left out there now. And so your point earlier about, you know, the timing of stuff, maybe that's a problem. But I just look at how, you know, these deals do happen. Other teams are able to execute them. And again, you're right. We don't know how deep, far down the road maybe the Kings have gotten on these types of moves. But they didn't do it last year and they didn't do it this year. So to me, it suggests, you know, without being sure, that they're not really looking to do that. And that ties to the bigger issue of, like, how realistic really are we being about where the Kings are mm-hmm. in their growth process? Mm-hmm. And to me, they're very early on, so early that the goal should still be getting picks. And there are ways to do that, and they haven't really pursued those avenues.
So let me share my theory with you, Grant, because I think you and for the most part, so many are in the same agreement that the Kings are in the early stages of a rebuild. However, Vlade and the current Kings front office, and even Dave Yeager in a sense, is approaching this as if they're in year two of a maximum 3-year turnaround. So they're looking for fixes and changes and a core to start showing flashes of being able to make that turnaround in year three at the latest, which we're talking about the 2019-2020 season, which in reality isn't that far away. So my theory is that Vlade and even Dave Yeager, who's been very vocal about this as a 3-year process, are looking at this with going all in with this young core that they put together that they believe can be exciting, win enough games, and show enough of a flash, similar to how the young Minnesota Timberwolves did a number of years ago, that will convince maybe one or two bigger name, not MVP or All-Star caliber, but maybe bigger name free agents to consider coming to Sacramento and coming to the Kings next year with this very big potential free agency summer that we have coming up in 2019. So explaining that theory, I'm not sure if I did it in a very clear way, but ultimately the clock is ticking for Vlade and he knows it, and which most likely means the clock is ticking for Yeager, because most of the time a GM's fired, so is the head coach, or the head coach is gonna be going soon thereafter. Is that an appropriate way, in your opinion, if it made sense, to run a franchise or to approach this next season and even the season after, or is that all wrong and they should be operating in a completely different mindset?
Well, I mean, subjectively, just looking at what is going on with the Kings, what you've said is logical, and I think you're right. I mean, it's this idea of a 3-year timeline does seem to be informing the moves that they're making. I just think it's a mistake to put a finite date on a rebuild, and to put it out there as this is how long it's going to take, because we know that it takes longer than that most of the time. I mean, the Sixers, you know, they were just as aggressive as you can possibly be, and it took them a long time to get to a point where they were good again, and they had a bunch of draft misses along with the hits. It's just, patience is so important, and it's so hard to get an owner that's willing to let an executive and a coach do it the right way. And the right way takes a long time. And it takes a lot of long-term thinking, and it takes a real devotion and to a vision and a clarity of purpose that is just really difficult. I mean, look at the bad deals that happen around the league. Look at Blake Griffin going to Detroit. It was just the mother of all panic moves by a coach and executive that needed to make a splash before he got fired. And Stan Van Gundy got fired. And now the Pistons are stuck with that terrible contract. The Magic have done it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've just changed regimes. So anytime I think you're putting pressure, especially in a short enough window, like 2 or 3 years, on a front office and a coach to sort of get things going, if you're putting pressure on them, they're going to react and make, I think, mistakes, because it just doesn't, you just can't build Rome in a day or in 3 years in this case. You've got to have a real patient owner who's not going to put those sorts of constraints on you. And that's how mistakes happen, is if you're not willing to sort of sit there and do it the hard way. But again, what you said makes sense. I do think the way the Kings have conducted business suggests that they're trying to turn this around maybe faster than they should.
But what's crazy, Grant, is that Vlade have put this on himself. I mean, he straight up said after the Vlade trade that it's going to be better. We're going to be a playoff team, or we're going to be competing in this amount of time, or I will step down. This is not something that we heard from the owner. This is something we heard from Vlade directly. And now we're hearing the same thing from Magic Johnson, saying, if I can't get these caliber of free agents, I will do the same thing. I will step down. So a bold tactic to earn yourself some time, I suppose, from your fan base and from your ownership. But ultimately, it puts a lot of unnecessary pressure on you. I will say this. One thing I'm excited about for next season is that wins finally seem to matter for this team. And a lot of it is because the Kings don't have a 2019 first rounder next year. I can't stand tanking, Grant. I can't stand any of it. We had so many here in Sacramento that were pro trying to throw games, trying to lose. And I was telling everybody, look, the lottery system is a lottery system for a reason. Even if you're the worst team in the NBA, you have only a 25% chance of the number one pick. And Kings fans know that well. Back in the Tyreek Evans draft, they were the worst team in the NBA and ended up getting the worst possible pick they could get at 4. So it's not a guaranteed solution. So I'm excited that the Kings are approaching this next season saying, look, it's all about wins at this point. We're just trying to, as Dave Yeager says, the training wheels are off. We're just trying to see what we have here. We're trying to be competitive on a night-in, night-out basis, win as many games as we can, and hopefully that is enough to buy us either a little bit more time or maybe a free agent during the summertime. What do you think of that kind of approach, and does that make you maybe a little more excited to pay attention to Kings basketball?
Oh, I think so. I love what you said. I love the sort of, like, there's going to be a purity to this season because there won't be competing concerns of, like, is a win actually bad, right? Now it's going to be, look, we don't have a pick. It doesn't matter if we finish with 25 wins or 35 or, you know, who knows, whatever. We're just trying to win. And there's something kind of refreshing about that. I'm an anti-tanking person too, but more, I hate that the incentives are set up that make it the logical decision to tank. If you really want a superstar in the draft, like you said, the odds aren't good, but the odds are better for you if you lose more. So the system I hate it. I hate that it incentivizes losing, but the Kings don't have to worry about that now. I think I'm definitely more excited to just kind of see, you know, which of these guys to me looks like a starter on a playoff team. That's kind of how I try to view teams that are on the way up. Like, is De'Aaron Fox a guy that's going to be able to start for you in a playoff series in 2 years, 3 years? Is Marvin Bagley a guy that's going to be your go-to scorer on a, you know, 50-win team? I like to look for that kind of stuff, and this is going to be the best year in a long time to really kind of do your scouting in that respect.
Last thing for you, Grant, and I thank you so much for taking the extended time to appear here on the podcast. Vlade must be pulling his hair out because naturally the Kings are looking to finally play and try and win as many games as they can and finally go into a season where wins matter. And lo and behold, LeBron James comes to the Western Conference. And not just that, he comes to the Pacific Division, where now you went from playing LeBron twice a year to four times a year, being with the Los Angeles Lakers now. So it's frustrating because the West just seems to get better and better. You have teams like the Utah Jazz that are trending up, the Dallas Mavericks with the Luka Doncic draft and now getting DeAndre Jordan seem to have gotten a lot better pretty quickly. There's so much competition in the Western Conference. A lot of teams or a lot of analysts have the Kings pegged as a clear-cut 15 bottom of the Western Conference already without having seen them play a game. In your opinion, what is a good number for the Kings to realistically shoot for that maybe Vlade keeps his job and you're feeling good going into next season, and is that number achievable?
Man, I don't know if there's like a wins threshold that I would say, okay, this is what the Kings need to hit. This is where Vlade should feel comfortable. I mean, you just look at the West, and like you said, it's ridiculous. They won 27 games a year ago, and I think right now, this is going to change, but right now, there's not a single team in the West that's going to tank, that's going into this year planning to tank. And I don't know when the last season was we said that. So the road is just brutal. I think, you know, if the Kings can win 10 more games than last year, that's great. So that gets them to 37. But the bigger thing for me is just, is somebody going to establish himself as the cornerstone?
Yes.
And if you get that, then you're good, I think. Or you should be good as an executive and maybe even for Jaeger as a coach, because that's what this is about. You're not going to get out of the bottom of the West or the middle of the West or wherever the Kings wind up this year unless you've got that guy, because then you start building around somebody and you establish an identity and a style and all that good stuff. So that's what I'm looking for. I honestly, if they won 25 games and De'Aaron Fox looked like a superstar, I think that would be better than them winning 40 games and Fox is still iffy. So that's kind of where I would put my focus for this year.
I agree with you 100% about establishing the star. I think De'Aaron Fox can be that, and he showed flashes of that with his ability to play in the clutch last season. I'm also super high on Buddy Hield. Whether the Kings decide to start him or bring him off the bench, I believe, honestly, if he's worked this summer on being able to create his own shot, that is the one step he is missing from becoming either a sixth man of the year, or in my opinion, if he adds that to his game, we're talking most improved player of the year type of award category, which is something that Kings fans have to shoot for, because it's sure as hell not going to be a trophy at the end of the year. But my threshold, and tell me if this makes sense to you, Grant, my threshold was 34 wins, because the Kings never won more than 33 with DeMarcus Cousins as their centerpiece. So if you're Vlade and this core, when the West has gotten so much better, if you're able to win more games than you ever won with DeMarcus Cousins with this young group, to me, that buys Vlade enough time to continue on this rebuild, maybe buys him another year or two and an offseason to see if he can add on to it. And then, of course, depending upon who steps up and the quality of the players, that may decide what the Kings go out and do in next summer's free agency. What do you think about that kind of number?
Yeah, and I mean, look, 34 wins in the West environment of 2018-19 is like 45 in past years. I mean, there's just, it's so brutal. Every single team, you know, the Suns are going to go for it. The Grizzlies are going to go for it. The Mavericks are going, I mean, everybody's going to try to win. So if you can win 34 games with this West landscape, that would really be something. I think that probably would get you some time. But again, I think we agree. It's really more about the individual guys, like how good are these potential, you know, future stars going to be?
Grant, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to appear on the podcast. I could talk to you all day, man. This has been such a fantastic conversation. We'll absolutely have to do it again, maybe close to the start of next season or in the midst of next season. You have been fantastic. Listeners, I encourage you, check out Grant's work. You can follow him on Twitter at @GT_Hughes. He puts out great work and great pieces all the time for Bleacher Report, NBA specific, and it's not just bashing the Sacramento Kings, as so many of you want to say. It's a lot of fantastic content. I encourage you to check out Grant's work. It is fantastic. I certainly will. A great follow on Twitter as well. Grant, thank you again for taking the time coming on the Locked On Kings podcast. The pleasure was truly all mine.
You got it. Thanks. Anytime.
I truly hope you enjoyed my conversation over the last two podcast episodes with Grant Hughes. I'm very appreciative of him taking the time. So much good stuff in there, and I encourage you to revisit it and listen to it maybe even a couple times this summer. I've already listened to the whole conversation about three or four times through, and every single time I get a new blurb or nugget of something that he said that I didn't catch or I didn't really think about. It always provides good perspective. Grant was so kind enough to take that much time, and we'll definitely be having him back on the podcast in the future to talk more Kings basketball and then more NBA basketball. Again, you can check out all of his work on Bleacher Report. He writes not just about the Kings or about the Golden State Warriors or West Coast teams. He writes about all of the NBA and always provides some great perspective. So again, you can follow him on Twitter also at @GT_Hughes. Great follow for anyone who, like me, calls himself a diehard NBA and basketball fan. Coming up on Friday, Tim Maxwell from Sacktown Royalty will be joining us. If you follow him on Twitter, the Sacktown Baby Giraffe, you will know that he's been spewing out some interesting takes about the Sacramento Kings jerseys and even about the idea of the Kings sending Bogdan Bogdanović to Minnesota in a trade for Andrew Wiggins. We're going to give him an opportunity to share all of those thoughts here on this podcast, a good opportunity for me to go back at him as well. Tim, personal friend of mine, always fun to have him back on the podcast, and I know so many of you enjoy his takes and his time when he appears on the podcast. So Tim will be here on Friday, and then next week have a couple of good guests in the works for you. One confirmed already, I mentioned this in yesterday's episode, the G-Man, Gary Gerald, the radio voice of the Sacramento Kings. He will be joining me next week for an episode of Locked On Kings. I have so many guests in the works for you in the weeks to come. We are going to get through this August month into September, the start of training camp, and then October, baby. October is where it all gets going. Preseason followed by the tip-off of the regular season. We have you covered for the next few months right here on Locked On Kings, and if you made the decision to make this your Sacramento Kings podcast home and hub, you made the right decision. Thank you to everybody who listened to this interview over the past couple of days. Again, send me any of your feedback that you have to this interview, any feedback that you have to this podcast in general, questions you may have, topics you want covered, or just your takes in general at @MattGeorgeKHDK. You can send them to me on Twitter or you can email me mgeorge@sacklocalmedia.com. I look forward to hearing them and getting into a deeper conversation with you. Do that. I can't wait for it. And I will talk to you on Friday. This has been the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast,
part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.